Welcome, everybody, to the NFL Show on the Grilling Truth Sports Network. The NFL Show is brought to you by Path of Purity, Replenishing Care Technologies. Make sure you check them out at pathofpurity.direct/replenishingcare/. It is a time-released CBD, which, I mean, from trying the CBDs, I know my wife's used it before, actually works great. And tomorrow at 1 o'clock, we will have James G. Comerford on, who is the owner of the company, which could show you a special deal to get it directly here from him and the Grueling Truth. So without any further ado, I'm Mike Goodpaster. I want to welcome in our resident Pittsburgh Steeler loser, Sam Teets. How you doing, Sam?
I'm doing awesome, Mike. Just trying to recover from all the losses I've taken in the past two or three weeks.
All right. Well, at least Bama didn't have to play, or Clemson didn't have to play Bama last night, so that worked out good. Let's go ahead. We are going to look at, since we're divisional playoff weekend, there's not a lot going on, we're going to look at our top 10 divisional playoff games of all time. Sam, I'm going to let you start it off at number 10.
Yeah, you're not going to like this one. You're probably going to ask me why I have this one on the list, but I'm taking a few more recent games towards the bottom of the list because I know it's going to be more historic once I get to the top. And this is just purely for the spectacle. I put the Houston Texans versus Kansas City Chiefs from 2019 up here. That was the game that Houston jumped out 24-0 on them in like the first quarter. And Kansas City responds. The game's at 51-31 at the end. Almost basically putting the hammer down. There, Kansas City ends up getting to the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl.
So you believe that that's one of the 10 greatest divisional playoff games at all time?
I knew you weren't going to like it.
Well, it's stupid. I mean, did you pick that list up while you and Sam were watching Nickelodeon?
All right, you're just writing off Steve's hell. Joke.
Yes, Steve's joke was good, though. My number 10, 2005, the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Indianapolis Colts. This was supposed to be the Colts' turn to win the Super Bowl after the Patriots were eliminated. Manning's Colts looked like they were too good. I think they started off that year like 12-0 or 13-0. Seemed like they did every year. Late in the game, Jerome Bettis fumbled deep in Colts territory. Roethlisberger saves the touchdown. And then, of course, Adam Vanderjagt, with a chance to tie the game, misses badly. I mean, really badly, Sam. You probably could have got closer to making that kick than he did.
That wasn't a very far kick, was it? I thought it was real close as well, if I remember.
No, it was was it in the 30-yard range or something? I don't think it was real far. But it was a real bad kick. And, I mean, the thing that stands out here was the tackle. I mean, Jerome Bettis' tackle may have been the biggest play of his career, and he's a running back. And we can actually watch it now, courtesy of YouTube, which they'll probably block us. But they've already demonetized us, so who the hell cares?
Yeah, I remember this is one, like, Jerome Bettis, the ball pops out right there, and Ben comes up and just gets like the shoelace
part of the tackle.
Yeah, you just think, but yeah, he just barely clips him here. I mean, realistically, looking at the back of the play, I have no idea how, like, you have so much field space. I don't know how, if you're a defender, you kind of sprint wider and get around Ben more. Then you kind of ran a little bit right at him, which I don't really understand looking back at it.
That's enough Steeler crap, don't you think? Especially if Myron Cope's
looking at Steelers games where we won, actually. I like looking at back at the good old days when there was a defense and a running game.
Yeah, and also that cheap shot on Carson Palmer, which got you guys into that game.
All right, Mike. Okay.
Well, it's just true. All right, number 9. I'll go first. 1988, Philadelphia Eagles at the Chicago Bears, the Fog Bowl. This was a game that I think, without the fog, I think the Eagles would win the game and play the 49ers in the championship. The thing that is interesting to me, and probably only me, but that's the same day the Bengals played the Bills in the AFC championship game. And I remember going with my dad to the game. And before, when the game started, I remember watching it at home, though, about halfway through the first quarter before we left for the Bengals game. And it was sunny out in Chicago. We get to the stadium, and the old Jumbotron at Riverfront Stadium's playing the game. And we didn't even know they were playing the game, because when we got there and you looked up, all you saw was a white screen. So we figured maybe they just weren't showing the game there. And then when I get home, I find out that, you know, they had played this. Actually, it wasn't the Bills game. It was the Seahawks game, the 81 divisional playoff. So I think this was like January the 31st. But it was something where we didn't know why they weren't showing a game, but they really were.
Yeah, I mean, you can't – even now, sometimes when the fog rolls in, like there was the Florida – I think it was the Florida-LSU game this year in college football. Like the fog rolls in. And even like the modern cameras, you can't always see through it. You just see like a white screen or like a white blur and hope to catch a little bit of the action in these kind of games. But I imagine it was much worse back then.
Yeah, and the thing that was amazing was people still sat there, drank beer, and watched the game even though they couldn't see it. And you can see it in NFL films where they actually had the play-by-play announcer, the stadium play-by-play, actually standing down on the field so he could see what's going on. All right, Sam, what's your number nine?
My number nine, again, no more recent one, the Baltimore Ravens versus the Denver Broncos for the 2012 season. This is the one where Jacoby Jones has that deep catch over Raheem Moore in double overtime against Denver. That says Baltimore going forward to the conference championship where they face New England. They end up with 49ers that year. But that play where Jacoby Jones catches that ball over the outstretched arm of Raheem Moore is one of the more iconic plays from the playoffs in the 2010s.
All right. I actually have that game higher, believe it or not, even though it's not that old.
Really? All right. All right. I
want to give you a number eight that is going to make you very happy again as a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. I'm going to go number eight, the Immaculate Reception. The ending of the game, it's like the Fog Bowl for me, it sits at number nine. It was a good game, but it was 20-12. It wasn't spectacular, but the fog made it memorable. The Immaculate Reception, this is a game that was actually like 7-6 up until the last few seconds. And it was a low-scoring defensive affair. And the Raiders would mount a late drive late in the fourth quarter, down 6-0. Kenny Stabler runs for a beautiful 30-yard touchdown to put the Steelers or Raiders up 7-6. And it seemed like that was it for the Steelers. And if you remember the Steelers, I don't even know if they've ever been to the playoffs in their history up until this point. And actually, through most of the history of the Pittsburgh Steelers, until you get the arrival of Chuck Knoll in 1969, I think it was, the Steelers were the laughing. They were the Bengals of the NFL before the Bengals came into existence.
Yeah, they were horrible. They were horrible.
Yeah, and that's mean to say that about the Bengals. But what we do have is the original NBC broadcast of this play. It's a short film, and I know this is a controversial play, especially in Oakland. And let's go ahead and let's watch it. I think Kirk Gowdy called this too.
Yeah, I remember seeing the images of them when I was younger, going back and watching this game, seeing the images of them like jumping down onto the field and storming the field. And that's kind of the start. It's kind of the start of the Pittsburgh Steelers dynasty, if you think about it, because Chuck Knoll did get there in 69. But they'd only playoffs, I believe, in 1947 before that. That was the second time they'd been in the playoffs overall. They didn't win the Super Bowl that year, but it kind of signaled, or was symbolic almost, that they were getting ready to actually put winning football on the field for at least the next decade or so.
Well, and the thing that was impressive, 1972, people forget this, they used to rotate who the home team was. And actually, the championship game, even though the Steelers had lost three or four games that year, the championship game, they hosted the undefeated Miami Dolphins, and they only lost the game 21-17. The week before that, the Dolphins played another AFC Central team at the time, the Cleveland Browns, and they only beat the Browns by 3 points. So, I mean, Cleveland and Pittsburgh were close to playing in the championship game that year, and that would have been scary because the interesting thing, if they play in 72, you know, everybody would have said, well, Cleveland will win because Pittsburgh's Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it changed the narrative a lot. Pittsburgh's Roman Chuck Knoll basically changed the narrative a lot during that time, and you picked the same game I did actually for number eight. I had that there as well, so I can't really add more to it because you obviously know more than I do, but to pull that one off, that really was the start of something that really...
I was only four, so let's get that straight. I was only four, so...
Oh, okay, all right.
I don't remember watching that one or the next one. Who do you got at number seven?
Another more recent one, and I don't know about the game itself, but this play makes it very iconic. It's 2017, the Minnesota Vikings versus the New Orleans Saints. This is the Minneapolis Miracle. Marcus Williams, the safety, drops his head inexplicably and just whiffs on Stephon Diggs, who has a clear-cut run straight to the end zone. It takes his helmet off, throws his helmet. Obviously, but they're noise going. They got streamers coming down, and Minnesota advances past the division round. A miracle play at the very end of the game.
I can see that one. I actually forgot about that one because, you know, in my mind, nothing really happened after 1990.
Well, yeah, I know. That's what I was going to say. That's why I was picking some of the more recent. Mike's not going to have these on the list. I have to add them up.
Yeah, because they're not as good at games. That's why we do the list together, because I know the old stuff. You know the new stuff. And we just kind of go from there. And the thing about it, that's another one of them New Orleans Saints moments, if you know what I mean, which we're headed for again.
I'm going to come theme now.
All right, let's go ahead. Let's look at the Minneapolis Miracle. Jeez.
He takes out his own guy, too. The only guy who would have had a chance to talk to Marcus Williams is knocking down his man.
Well, the thing that's amazing is the way he just jumped over to the defender, who all the defender had to do was stand there and catch him. I mean, yeah. I don't know why you're trying to run up and be a hero and smack him really hard. All you got to do is stay in front of him and grab him, and the game's over. So,
fight him out of bounds. You said bear hug him and drag him, and we're just dragging down. The game's over. You have a guy right there as well. You could gang tackle him. He needed to.
All right, number seven, the Kansas City Chiefs, Miami Dolphins, Christmas Day, 1971. This is one where the NFL decided that, you know, since you had football on New Year's Eve, you had it on Thanksgiving, they were going to try it on Christmas. The problem was this game ran so long that there was not another Christmas Day game until 1989, which was a Monday night game between the Bengals and the Vikings. But this was, it is still the longest game in pro football history. And, you know, forgotten is the effort of Chiefs running back Ed Podolak. Podolak finished the game with 351 all-purpose yards, receiving, kickoff returns, and two touchdowns. The Dolphins won the game 27-24 in two overtimes. And this is a game that the Chiefs could have won handily. But Jan Stenerud, who was a Hall of Fame kicker, missed two easy field goals in this game. Garo Yupremia missed one, came back, made one in the second overtime. But this is something that had such an effect that you didn't see another Christmas Day game for 18 years, Sam.
I mean, it makes sense because it was so looking at double overtime. It seems like both teams had opportunities at points to end this game, but they just could not connect. Like you said, the field goal, and then he had another one blocked. So it seemed like this was a chance where they could have ended the game multiple times, just never could put it away until the very end. And that Chiefs team, I think we brought them up a couple times because Hank Stram's got all the great defensive players. They got like maybe five or six players on that defense who made the Hall of Fame. So that's a great Chiefs team that ended up losing that game.
Well, that was a great Chiefs team that was at the end of being a great team, though. Because then you go 1971 all the way to 1986 before they make the playoffs again. In 1986, Frank Gans was the special teams guru. He was the head coach. Or actually, he wasn't the head coach. I think John Makovic was. But Frank Gans' special teams were so good that after they made the playoffs, they fired the head coach and made Gans the head coach. That didn't work out too good. They eventually lost, I think it was 36-15 or 35-16 to the Jets in the wild card game that year. Are we to your number seven or my number seven?
Wasn't this your number seven?
Oh, that was my number seven. What's your number seven?
Yeah. Well, my number seven, we already covered. My number seven was the Vikings in Smiten. So my number six is the Dallas Cowboys versus the San Francisco 49ers in 1972. And this game in itself might not have been too spectacular, but I think the ending is what switches it around a little bit. Dallas scores 17 points unanswered in the fourth quarter to come back. I don't think Roger Staubach had even started that game or played in majority of the game, but it comes in the fourth quarter after him missed a lot of time during the year. Ends up leading two game-winning drives basically at the very end that puts Dallas over San Francisco for the win.
Yeah, and that was two or three years in a row where they beat San Francisco, where San Francisco was a really good team. I think John Brody was the quarterback. My number six would be the ghost to the post game. You ever hear of that, Sam?
Yes, I have, Mike.
Have you
I
ever
seen the ghost to the post?
Have you ever seen Thelma and Louise or Hoosiers?
Still no. That's still a no.
But this is a game that I don't think gets enough credit. It was a great game. I actually remember watching this game. I believe it was on Christmas Eve or close to it around that time. It was 31-31 tie at the end of regulation. Went to overtimes. And in the second overtime, Ghost Dave Casper makes the catch to win the game. This was the end of the Colts in Baltimore, really. Because you had Burt Jones, 75-76, 77. Was a great quarterback, 75 and 76. They lost back-to-back years after winning a division to the Pittsburgh Steelers. This was their best chance. And they lose in 1977 to the Raiders, who would go on to lose to the Broncos. This is a Colts team that I think was the best team in the AFC at that point. The next year is when all these injuries start happening to Burt Jones. And in 78, 79, 80, 81, 82, the Colts are horrible in all those years. They never recovered from Burt Jones basically being gone from the team. And we're going to go ahead and watch the ghost of the post here. But, I mean, really, maybe, how about this? If they win the Super Bowl, if they would have beat the Raiders and went to the Super Bowl, maybe they never moved to Indianapolis. I like the dramatic NFL films music. That's what made the NFL so famous.
The NFL films play a huge role in getting the NFL a lot of publicity.
Ooh, look at that. There's Dave Casper again. That was what got him in the field goal position to tie the game. Should have found the Kirk Gowdy.
I feel like Dave Casper gets overlooked a lot.
Oh, Dave Casper gets overlooked a ton. But tight ends, I mean, outside of what, Mike Ditka, John Mackey, tight ends back at that point, what, Charlie Smith from Detroit, did I get the name right there? Those guys, outside of those guys, tight ends weren't huge parts of offenses at that time.
I put a lot. Well, no, I guess they were primarily still blockers, right?
Yeah, they were supposed to be blockers. And really, Ditka and Mackey were great blockers. Casper was a good blocker. That was the touchdown that won him the game. Where are we at? You're number six?
Yeah, I believe we're – no, I did my number six. Sorry, we're at my number five.
All right, go ahead.
I think we – you know, I'm going to change my – because I had a different one on number five, but I'm going to bring one in thought of really up until this point. But I'll go with 2011 San Francisco 49ers versus New Orleans Saints.
That's my number five, too. That's my number five.
That's your number five. I was going to say this one shouldn't be this high, but I wanted to shake it up a little bit and try to add a newer perspective in here. But the 49ers won that game 36-32. That's, I think it's still Alex Smith's time of San Francisco versus Drew Brees. It was a high-scoring affair. Both quarterbacks played great. I think Brees actually threw two interceptions, which might have been the difference in the game because San Francisco wins by 4 points at the very end. Although it didn't produce a Super Bowl contender, it was still a great game, but I think a lot of people will go back and look at finally because of all the offense that was available in that one.
Yeah, it was Jim Harbaugh's 49ers debut in the playoffs. He didn't disappoint. The Niners got up early. The Saints fought back with Drew Brees. The Saints got up 32-29. The 49ers needed to mount one more drive. The iconic catch three, of course, catch two was Terrell Owens. Catch one was Dwight Clark. Alex Smith finds Vernon Davis on a huge catch, and that – say a 49ers team would go on to actually host the Giants, I think, at the championship game that year, and the Giants would win the game in overtime. And then the next year, Colin Kaepernick took him to the Super Bowl, correct?
Yeah, I believe so. In that Giants game, I remember watching that because my dad is a big Giants fan. There was like a muff punt in there by San Francisco. There was a whole bunch of things that went wrong. It was a very sloppy game for the 49ers.
All right, number four, Sam.
Yeah, my number four is actually the ghost of the post. We already talked about that. My number four is the 1977 matchup between the Raiders and Colts. You had to have it up there in the top five. It had to be on my top five. Even I could not leave something like that out of such a great.
Well, see, it's really good to be old because then you get to see stuff like that.
I guess so, but you know, at some point, I'll be the old person telling someone about something they've never seen before.
Yeah, and you know what, Sam? That'll happen a lot sooner than what you think it will. A lot.
Probably.
Before you know it, you'll be the old guy. And you'll be busting somebody's balls about some movie you saw in 2025 and why they haven't seen it yet. It'll be you and Sam, the Sam and Sam show. Just ripping on two young guys that don't know any better. All right. My number four, is that where we're at on me, is the Raiders or the Ravens Broncos. I love this because I can't stand Peyton Manning. I'm sure everybody knows that. But we got to watch this play. I mean, this play made Joe Flacco a rich man, or one of the plays that did on that Super Bowl run. I mean, how do you let Jones get behind you like that in a situation like that?
I remember watching that game and feeling like sick to my stomach, because obviously I'm a Steelers fan, so I didn't want the Baltimore Ravens to make it a deep run in the playoffs. I remember watching that game. All you have to do is keep Jones in front of you, and you don't have a problem. Instead of being more, has to end up backpedaling and let Jacoby Jones, one of the fastest receivers on the field, get 5 yards behind him. That's still inexplicable to this day.
All right, Sam, what are you at, number three?
Yeah, my number three, this is a more recent one. This is one of the games I've actually enjoyed most watching in the past couple of years. 2015, the Arizona Cardinals versus the Green Bay Packers. This had a lot of stuff at the very end of the game. Green Bay needed a Hail Mary play from Aaron Rodgers, and they got it. And Larry Fitzgerald took over in basically the fourth quarter in overtime and got Arizona a 26-20 win. Obviously, the Cardinals didn't go much further after that, but this was still one of the most enjoyable games to watch, I think, from the past 10 years.
All right, my number three is one you probably never thought of. I don't even think most people would think of it unless you were a Browns fan or maybe a Jets fan. 1986, Jets and Browns, back-and-forth shootout. The Browns made more plays. Bernie Kosar threw for almost 500 yards. Freeman McNeil rushed for a 25-yard touchdown to put the Jets up 20-10 with like 5 minutes left in the game. And it seemed like one of those, well, they're Cleveland, so this is what happens. Of course, they lost in 1980 at home to the Raiders. But the Browns were able to force the game into overtime, and kicker Mark Mosley actually missed a field goal to win the game. But the killer here was, I think it was 20-10. There was like 3.5, 4 minutes left. It was like 3rd and 10. And Mark Gastineau gets called for a personal foul on hitting Bernie Kosar. And that personal foul actually kept the Jets from playing the Broncos. And the 1986 Jets were a really good football team that I think could have beat the Denver Broncos and could have went on to the Super Bowl. And when you look at the Jets, I think 1982, they had the best team in the NFL. Don Shula muddied the playing field, as you would say, and beat them 14-0 in the championship game. This 86 Jets team was a hell of a football team. They started off the year 10-0. Then they lost like their next six games, beat Kansas City in the first round, and came out with, and I believe Pat Ryan, their backup quarterback, was the starting quarterback in this game, played out of his mind. They had a huge lead, and they blew it. So that'll tell you how bad the Jets franchise is, that they actually blew a playoff game to the Browns.
Man, Greg's in the comments saying he agrees with me as a Browns fan. He doesn't ever want to see the Ravens win. And I'm right there with you. Although, to be honest, if it ended up being an AFC championship matchup somehow between Baltimore and Cleveland, which I don't think it will be, but if it did, I don't even know if I could root for either of those teams at that point. Well, like a nightmare.
Why do you have to be so hateful to Cleveland? They never get to win anything.
That's true. Greg, enjoy your playoff win. I'm sorry for the comments Chase Claypool made.
I don't ever want to see the Ravens or the Steelers win. I don't really care about the Browns because they suck like we do. No offense, Greg, but the history of the Bengals and the Browns since about 1990 has not been spectacular, to say the least. So that rivalry kind of died with that. All right, Sam, the top two have to be the top two in any order. If you screw this up, you're going to be an idiot. What's your number two?
Well, I'm used to you calling me an idiot, so I don't know. Is this really going to change my picks here? But I got the Raiders versus Dolphins from 1974. This is the Sea of Hands game where the Raiders win 28-26. Did I get it right?
Yes, you did. You got it correct. I mean, that's number two. Number one then has to be 81 Dolphins Chargers, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. The epic in Miami.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think this. Greg saw both games, so I would really like Greg's opinion on which one was the better game, because the only thing I've seen was the NFL films like Our Show they did on the See a Hands game. So I've got a buddy, Joe Rodriguez, who lives in New York, who's probably about 10 years older than me, that still swears it was a better game than the 81 game. And I saw the 81 game. I remember watching the 81 game. It was maybe the greatest football game I have ever seen. And when I say that, I've seen a lot of football games, but that game, the back and forth, I mean, one team's up 24-0. Next minute, the other team's up 38-31 or something. The game goes tied. You got Kellen Winslow blocking field goals, and they end up winning the game at the end. The interesting thing is like 80 degrees there, and the Chargers win. The next week, the Chargers go to Cincinnati, and it's minus 59. It's a 140-degree switch in that game.
Like the highest wind chill game in NFL history or something like that.
I believe it was the coldest game either way, because I think it was minus 12 and minus 59. And the Packers game was only like minus 17, so those guys were sissies. You know, the Packers Cowboys game that everybody raves about.
Everyone talks about was the
where
they couldn't get any footing on the ground. Yeah, I've seen the old plays, the old NFL films. Thanks for that.
Yeah, I prefer the Bengals. Here we go. We got to go with this. Monday Night Football highlights. Howard Cosell.
How much of Kenny Stabler's prime did you get to watch? Because I know his career kind of peaked, I guess you could say, in the mid-1970s.
Well, I mean,
did you get to see any of his career, like at the peak of his career? Or was
the first year I can remember the NFL is probably about 1975. So I remember when they won the Super Bowl in 1976. The thing about Stabler is he did everything wrong. He threw a lot of picks. But if the game was close at the end, he would beat you. And if you watched that, a couple of throws there, especially the throw over the middle he made to really get him inside the 30-yard line, was an absolutely great throw. And the throw he made to Clarence Davis, could you imagine? That would lead off SportsCenter for 10 years if Patrick Mahomes did it to win a playoff game.
You're right. It would be on the top of every sports package, every highlights package for the next decade. That's exactly what it would be, because it's such an iconic play. And that's why it's still one of the best games, one of the best playoff games, I say, of all time. Not even just divisional round games, like of all time, you have to put it up there.
Yeah, I would like to be able to see the whole game, because so far, not the whole game exists. I mean, you can listen to the Bob King Raider call of the game. You can see the highlights. They did a big highlight thing where you can see most of the game. but I'd really like to see the whole game with Kirk Gowdy calling the game. See, you missed it, Sam, because that was football.
I did.
I mean, what you saw there was football, and you don't get to see that anymore. I mean, last night we watched what? Bama's guy hits the Ohio State guy to keep him from scoring a touchdown, and he gets thrown out of the game.
Yeah, that was in like the first quarter, wasn't it? That was very early on. I feel like we get more calls like that in college football than in the NFL.
And I really think they need to take a second look at throwing a guy out for one of those, because he's just trying to keep the dude from getting the first down and a touchdown. He's trying to hit him with the closest thing he's got to him. I know it's not right. I know guys like Ryan Shazier get hurt from it, but maybe make it two or just have a degree. You look at it on the film. If you think he's really trying to take the dude's head off on purpose and he's not really trying to make a play on the ball, I could see throwing him out of the game right away. But right there, to me, it looked like he led with his head. He didn't aim at his head. It looked to me like he was going in for his shoulder pads, and he just kind of came up and clipped it. I don't think that when a kid has worked his ass off to get to that point, that he should be thrown out for playing hard. He was not playing dirty. There's a big difference between playing dirty and playing hard.
No, I agree. I think there should be like the NBA has like a flagrant one, flagrant two system where it's like if it's intentional, you get a certain level and you're thrown out of the game. If it's just accidental but it happens, it's one and you get penalized, but you're still allowed to stay in the game. I think that's how it should be. Throwing a kid out for something like this, I think it's a bang, it's milliseconds for you to make a decision on a play that's going to alter your game. So I think you can't judge a guy or can't throw a guy out based on a tenth of a second, split-second decision like that.
Hey, and this is the thing, Greg, at least we didn't relive the 1980 Raiders-Browns game. But, you know, what the hell? Actually, Greg says that the only network that has a copy of Super Bowl III is the CBC. I'm not sure. Actually, Greg, I would beg to differ because I actually have an NBC copy of Super Bowl III in color. Super Bowl IV, I know, is only exists with CBC. Because the CBC, if you go back, you look at old World Series games, the entire 68 World Series, Tigers, Cardinals exist. That's from the CBC. The CBC seemed to save everything, where the networks around here didn't save everything, which is why we can't see like the iconic Chiefs-Dolphins game. But yeah, the Super Bowl III, I actually got from a guy at NBC in 1989 for a small king's ransom. And the quality was not very good. But yeah, it was Super Bowl IV, Greg. And the only thing that exists is there is a color version of like the last 9 or 10 minutes that I know has been dubbed onto it. Super Bowl IV is a horribly boring game, but I would like to bring up Otis Taylor should be in the Hall of Fame, and he's not, and it's criminal because I think he's one of the greatest wide receivers that ever lived. But, all right. Do you want to watch some highlights from the 1981 Dolphins Chargers, or you just want to talk about the game?
Oh, we can put on some highlights. I agree with you, though, with Otis Taylor. So that came across me the other day. I was looking through these games, trying to pick some out. And Otis Taylor's up there. There were a couple of players, I think, from that team in Kansas City that should be in the Hall of Fame that aren't.
Well, I think most of them are in now. But there was a lot of great players. Buck Buchanan, all those guys were studs. Here we go.
I think there was a tackle.
I love this game. I think it's Wes Chandler that returns this, isn't it? Yeah.
Number 89, yeah.
Chuck Muncy, underrated great running back. James Brooks, underrated great running back. Uwe von Schaumann. David Woodley.
This is from the game where they had the iconic picture of Kellen Winslow getting carried off the field, right?
Yeah, that was Don Strock. David Woodley used to start the games, and then Don Strock would come in. Here's the little hook and lateral. I think that got it to 24-17 at a half. Might have tied it at 24, but it was 24-0 Chargers at the start of this game.
Was this Don Strock's best game of his career?
Don Strock had a lot of them. Don Strock, Greg, is a Browns fan, and he'll remember this, but 1988, Don Strock came in. Bernie Kosar got hurt towards the end of the season. Strock came in and played well on a Monday night in Miami. I think they lost 38-31 or they won 38-31. And then the next week they played the Houston Oilers, which was the big rivalry at that time in the wild card game. Or they had to beat them last game of the season to make the playoffs. They beat them to make the playoffs. Strock was the winning quarterback in that game in the snow. And then they lost the wild card round, I think 24-23 the next week in a rematch in Cleveland against Houston again. And Rolf Brodersky is interesting because he was a guy that a year or two before this had cancer and actually was down to like 105 pounds at one point, and they thought he was going to die. And he ends up coming up being the hero in this game. But, see, I paid attention back then. I don't pay as good attention now.
Yeah. Now you don't care, but back then, I could see why you paid attention, though. There were some great games. Most of them
that was good stuff. About. If people hit each other and, you know, it was allowed if you wanted to kill somebody. I know it sounds bad, but it was true. I mean, it was.
No dancing for TikToks?
Yeah, there was no dancing for TikTok because there was no TikTok. You had one phone. It was usually in the kitchen, and it had like a 15-foot cord. If you wanted to talk to somebody, everybody knew you were.
So, I knew. We had one of those. We had one of those in my house.
Still?
We still have one of those.
Oh, yeah. How old are your parents?
They're a little bit younger than you are, I think.
Oh, screw you, Sam. That was mean. All right. I should have had Risley on the show today. That way there'd be somebody older than me on here. All right. Sam, you will not be here tomorrow. Like I said, we will run a show for Replenishing Care Technologies, Path of Purity, CBD. James Comerford, the CEO of the company, will be on to discuss that. So make sure you check that out. Then we'll be back Thursday, Sam. We're only a couple days then from a divisional playoff weekend that I think looks extremely interesting.
I mean, you got to know what they have on the AFC side of things. You got all the young quarterbacks over there. And you go with the NFC side, you got 37-year-old Aaron Rodgers, 43-year-old Tom Brady. Drew Brees is, what, 40 or 42 at this point. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this all plays out.
And then you got John Wolford or
– and Jared Goff.
But here you go. Greg Gorecki, Billy White Shoes Johnson was dancing for TikTok before his time. Billy White Shoes Johnson was a bad dude. You ever hear of him, Sam?
I heard of White Shoes Johnson before. I have heard of that. I didn't know his first name was Billy.
Come on. You got to know who Billy White Shoes Johnson is. All right. Maybe we'll get him on the show if he's still alive. I'll find him. I've interviewed a lot of those Oilers. I can find him as long as he's still alive. All right, guys. We're going to wrap it up. Make sure you check out Rockfin. All right. We're going to wrap it up. You can hear us anywhere you find podcasts. You can catch us daily at 1 o'clock. So for now, for Sam Teets, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been watching and listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.